Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Father Daniel, we're into the month of May.
It's a beautiful month.
The month of Mary, but just recently, like really recently, learned that there's a second feast day for St. Joseph.
That's right. We started off the month. May 1st is the feast of St. Joseph the Worker. Some people think that maybe that's some other saint, but it's actually St. Joseph, the foster father of Jesus. He gets two feast days. Now, March 19th, of course, is the solemnity of Joseph. He's the foster father of Jesus. But May 1st is the St. Joseph the Worker. That was established in 1955 by Pope Pius XII because the communists had co-opted that day, May 1st, as the International Workers Day. And so Pope Pius, as a way to evangelize our modern-day culture, said, you know what? The greatest worker of all was St. Joseph the Worker, and he can give a spiritual sense to the Workers' Day.
Well, I was one of those people that thought it was a different St. Joseph.
Wait, if you're not learning something, you're probably dead. So I'm glad you're learning something, Chris.
Well, this week's stories, we're going to start out small. I'm going to start out with the story of everything.
Oh, small. Okay, got it.
It's a new documentary movie.
Ah, yeah, I heard about that.
So it claims that modern science has gotten reality all wrong.
Okay.
The purely materialist view of scientists for the past several centuries is that the universe's existence is a cosmic accident.
Hmm.
The film argues instead that science is pointing to the existence of God by presenting what its creators describe as evidence from cosmology, physics, and molecular biology. Recent discoveries are lining up with theological arguments about the origin of life. The documentary builds its case around three main arguments. First, it argues that virtually all scientists now agree the universe began to exist at a specific point in the past.
Okay.
So even Einstein first thought the universe had no beginning, but astronomical observations forced him to change his mind.
Hmm.
The Big Bang Theory, which, of course, was posited by
a Catholic priest.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Walks us to the doorstep of what philosophers call the prime mover theory, which is that a transcendent, immaterial, timeless, and intelligent force is behind the creation of the universe. So that's the first thing.
Sounds like God.
Sounds a lot like God. Rhymes okay. with God. Sounds like God. Spelt G-O-D.
Okay, got it.
Second, the film highlights that the discovery of DNA shows that each double helix contains arrays of chemical subunits that function like the zeros and ones in a computer program. So by itself, DNA accomplishes nothing, but it functions as a set of instructions like a computer code.
Hmm. Interesting.
It tells the cells both how to construct each of the complex proteins it needs to function and how to create new cells. So if there's a code, there must be a
coder. Hey, yeah.
And then third, the concept of fine tuning. It highlights that evidence of intentional design throughout nature in that the universe possesses a long list of properties, each of which must be just so.
Mm-hmm.
If gravity were infinitesimally stronger, all matter would collapse back in on itself. If gravity were infinitesimally weaker, stars and galaxies would never have formed. To support life, the Earth must lie just the right distance from the sun, project just the right magnetic field, possess just the right gravity to hold in the atmosphere of just the right density, and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool. I think this. I haven't seen this film.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it's great. And actually, Lee Strobel is one of the authors who's behind the producing of this movie, this documentary. I read years ago his book, The Case for a Creator, which, if you haven't read it yet, Chris, it's phenomenal. Very insightful because he recounts some of these interviews with influential and important scientists across the world. And I think, you know, going back to your initial point, yes, the materialist worldview that the science can explain everything is not sustained even by some of the greatest scientists. Most of the great scientists recognize that there are things beyond their explanation and that they point back to this creator. So that's kind of a constant throughout history. What's happened is that there's an ideological bent of certain people who really aren't very good scientists. They're mediocre, and they posit this ideological position that God doesn't exist. And then they try to explain things.
Well, the film uses one example that cites the astonishing complexity of the simplest forms of life. One lowly bacterium possesses a flagellum, a tiny tail or a rotor.
Mm-hmm, right.
The flagellum comprises more than 30 distinct parts so similar to those of an outboard motor that biologists speak of the flagellum's propeller as a drive shaft. So how could such a structure possibly have evolved its way into existence one mutation at a time?
Yeah, it's boggling the mind, and it is statistically impossible.
Right.
That's what's really fascinating when you start looking at it from the scientific standpoint. And, you know, this myth that somehow we can explain everything just with science and we take out God out of the picture is not something that even the founders of much of Western science did not sustain. I was just reading a book recently, and it was talking about Isaac Newton. And it wasn't until the 1930s when all of his documentation was rediscovered that they found incredible quantity of material that he had written about spiritual things. So even the founder of Western science and Isaac Newton of the laws of gravity was writing about spiritual realities as well, and was a very deeply spiritual man. And this is what we find. I mean, I've known many different scientists over the years. The father of one of our priests is an astronomer who had studied at a very high level and teaching at different universities. And he would speak about the existence of God and how all creation points back to a creator. So I think there's never a fear that the church has about looking at science, because all things point back to God.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. After a three-year legal battle, Maltese singer Matthew Grech, accused of publicly sharing how he abandoned a homosexual lifestyle after his conversion to Christianity, was finally acquitted in March of this year.
Was he living in the United States or in Malta?
In the country of Malta.
Okay, got it.
So in an interview broadcast in April of 2022 that was streamed live on Facebook and later uploaded to YouTube, Grech, a leader of the right-leaning Christian political party ABBA, A-B-B-A, in the country of Malta, described himself as ex-gay and spoke about his transition from a homosexual to a heterosexual lifestyle following a spiritual conversion at age 19.
Hmm.
Members of the Malta Gay Rights Movement reported the broadcast to police, and the police charged Grech with violating Article 3 of Malta's Affirmation of Sexual Orientation and Gender Expression Act.
That's a mouthful.
He had to undergo 17 or show up 17 court for 17 court appearances before finally being acquitted. And if he had lost, he could have faced 5 months in prison.
Mm-hmm.
The court's ruling rested on two separate grounds. One, the original law that Malta passed, this mouthful of what I'm not going to repeat it again, was passed in 2016. But there was an addition to it in 2023.
It was probably just slipped in there without anyone paying close attention.
Well, the 2023 edition occurred a year after his broadcast, and it made advertising or promoting. So the 2016 law made gender conversion therapy illegal.
Okay.
Okay. Or not gender conversion, homosexual conversion therapy.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But now advertising or promoting conversion therapy is now also illegal. And so the court ruled that his broadcast was a year before they added the advertising. Mm-hmm. So it was on kind of on weak grounds that he was
they
found.
Let it slide.
Right. But secondly, the court did properly note that individuals in Malta have the right to speak and promote their religious beliefs, and his conversion was considered spiritual, not medical. So Malta, have you ever been to Malta?
I have never been to Malta.
I've been to Malta a couple times. My brother-in-law is Maltese.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
So Malta's trajectory of burning people at the stake for homosexuality in the 1600s to criminalization of homosexuality under British law as a colony all the way up to the year 1973,
mm-hmm.
when they decriminalized it, to becoming the first country in Europe to ban conversion therapy in 2016, to now banning even talking about conversion therapy.
Wow.
In 2023. That's quite an arc.
It is. Yeah, it's a little bit of a pendulum swing. So maybe they need to be a little more balanced in their approach to everything. I mean, in fact, shouldn't we be looking at the facts? I mean, if someone can actually change their sexual orientation and in actual fact, not just in theory, and they're happier
with that. As
evidenced
by the fellow that did it.
Exactly. And he's not the only one. There are thousands of people who have been able to change their sexual orientation through God's grace and through a healing of different wounds from their past. So it is entirely possible. That's what the facts are showing. So why would people be afraid of the facts? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been to Malta in a long time. It's been a long time that we went, but I did go one time for Holy Week, and it is a very Christian, very Catholic place.
Well, Catholic. It's a primarily Catholic population in Malta.
Yeah.
So it's really sad that they would kind of go off the rails like that.
But I do know in the recent last decade that there have been quite a big immigrant from Africa population into Malta. And I don't know if that's changing the dynamics there, but regarding conversion therapy, I would think not. I don't know what's going on.
Because generally people who are coming from Africa are very strongly against homosexuality because they've experienced it. I mean, you go back to St. Charles Lwanga and his companion martyrs. The reason why they were martyred is because they stood up against the king who was practicing sodomy, and he was sodomizing boys in his court. So many places in Africa have a very strong reaction to homosexuality because they see how it has its predatory action against
people. Well, it's probably more the influence of joining the European Union.
Clearly, and there are forces within the European Union that are pushing for these type of things.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Let's go to a lighter topic.
Okay.
From Scientific American, a study of 37 urban bird species suggests that birds are more afraid of women than men, and researchers have no idea why.
They're afraid of women? So, how do they measure that?
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you. So in the study done in urban parks and green spaces in the Czech Republic, France, Germany, Poland, and Spain, men approaching a bird could get about 3 feet closer before they flew away than women could.
Huh.
The pattern remained regardless of what they were wearing, their height, or how they approached the birds. It suggests that birds are able to discern the sex of a human, and researchers just don't know why. So they have suggested that it's possibly the cues that they're picking up on, or maybe the person's gait or the smell, something like that they just don't know. So in Islamic thought, animals are considered conscious beings capable of glorifying God in ways humans can't fully perceive. Some Islamic scholars have interpreted heightened animal sensitivity, including the ability to distinguish human sex, as evidence of the richness and complexity of God embedded in creation.
Hmm.
So birds are a pretty fascinating species, aren't they?
They certainly are.
Yeah, we know they can use tools. They can, and particularly crows, they can remember human faces for years.
Hmm.
They even have found that crows will refuse to work with researchers who have treated them unfairly while conducting experiments.
Really?
Yes, so I think, you know, God's creation is so complex.
There's a richness there, incredible.
Right.
Well, and parrots, of course, can mimic human speech.
Right, right. Huh. Well, I think that we often think about just the mammals and, you know, the higher mammals, the dogs or dolphins or pigs as being so intelligent. But
also birds.
The birds, they're watching
us.
There's
also a friend of mine who's a priest who told me this legend of the woodpecker, that the woodpecker is an image of the mercy of God. You ever heard about that?
No, how's that?
I don't remember how the story goes. I'd have to look it up. But
okay.
There's some connection there as well.
Yeah.
But it's
well, you have the raven being sent out by Noah in from
and the
ark, and then the dove, you know, all sorts of other dove appearances in the New Testament.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, let me tell you a funny story about birds. But because when I was a kid, I liked to shoot with BB gun. And so my dad would let me shoot at the starlings because they were considered a dirty bird.
Yeah,
but he didn't want me shooting the songbirds, and I didn't want to shoot the songbirds because they're beautiful. But one time I accidentally shot a robin, and I felt so bad about it because they have such a beautiful song, and you know, birds are.
I think a starling
creatures.
Is related to a grackle. That's what they have in Texas, and they are a nasty, nasty bird. You cannot park under a live oak tree.
No, they make a mess.
Yes,
and we had them all over the place in Iowa growing up.
Yeah. Since we are still in the season of Easter, we're going to go back and highlight an incident that occurred Easter weekend.
Okay.
U.S. Department of Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins sent an email celebrating Easter to USDA employees on Easter Sunday. Rollins' email opened with, quote, "Happy Easter, he is risen indeed," unquote, and told staff it was a day to celebrate the foundation of our faith. The message included an illustration of a stone rolled away from a tomb with the words, "Christ is risen," above it. The Freedom From Religion Foundation fielded complaints from USDA employees who described the message as inappropriate and insulting. Among the back...
Who was it, insulting?
Well, I'm not sure, but I'll give you... Among the backlash was one staffer, and this I'm scratching my head at this one, who said the email was offensive to him as a devout Christian who works with people of other faiths, Muslims and Hindus. So I'm not sure why it was
offensive to him.
Yeah, I'm not sure the nexus there.
Kind of a non sequitur, but anyway, keep going.
So this seems to me that it was clear that this was personal speech by a government official, which enjoys more protection than government speech, like, say, putting a Bible verse on a federal agency website.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out whether I'd be upset if I worked for the government and my Hindu boss sent me an agency-wide message celebrating Diwali. I don't think I would, and I think I'd probably think nothing of it or just delete the email. But what if I was Jewish and I got this same email? I used to run a investment fund, and one of my main investors was Jewish, and they would invite us up for a holiday party every year at Christmas time, and we were told by the secretaries, don't say Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I guess that was offensive. I don't know, but
it depends on the person. I mean, some people take offense at the silliest things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if we live in a society that is all about grievances, I think that's going to be problematic no matter what way you slice it. I think we should be willing to celebrate, you know, our brothers and sisters that we share a common bond of humanity, and be happy for them when they're celebrating their holidays. And I think the same should be true for Christians. If we're going to, you know, if it's a great joy for us, it's the center of our life, we should be able to freely express that. Now, saying that like an official letterhead of a government department,
well, it was an email.
But it's coming from her official account. Yeah, I could see that that's probably not the wisest thing to do. But at the same time, I mean, if we're going to just take grievance at silly things like this, I mean,
I think this is just a case where, hey, have some thicker skin.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, there are parties out there that they as a cottage industry of, like, I got to show that I am against this, or that, you know, they want to create controversy with it.
Well, the fact that there is a freedom from religion, foundation, you know that that's what... that this is what they exist for.
Yeah, they and the ACLU and lots of other organizations like them.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com. Crossed
Wires. An Italian government research agency conducted extensive experiments attempting to replicate the distinctive image characteristics found in the Shroud of Turin using ultraviolet lasers.
Okay.
Their findings were notable. The UV laser that they used could produce coloration on linen fibers chemically similar to the yellowing seen on the shroud, but only on the outermost surface of the fibers. They could not fully reproduce the image using any known technology. To replicate even a small section of the shroud's image, they would have needed a laser that was far beyond current technological capability. Specifically, they would need a pulse of UV radiation across the entire surface of a human body simultaneously with an intensity that no existing laser can produce.
That's right.
Their conclusion was not that the image was miraculous, but rather that the energy required to produce it is outside the possibility of any light source available today, medieval or modern. It lines up with the, quote, resurrection flash theory that at the moment of Christ's resurrection, his body underwent a miraculous transformation where the glorification of the body released an intense burst of radiant energy, like a light radiation or a form of energy unknown to science. It's kind of cool, right?
It's incredibly cool. The more you look into the science behind the Shroud of Turin, and this is only one small aspect of it. A good friend of mine is a priest, Father Andrew Dalton. He's originally from here in Atlanta, and he's a professor at our university in Rome. And he is a specialist, one of the world specialists in the Shroud of Turin. He gives an incredible talk about that. He's come back a number of times here to Atlanta. So if you ever hear about him speaking here in Atlanta again on the Shroud of Turin, make sure you go, because it is so fascinating.
Definitely. So one of the things they also found was that no brush strokes or pigment that you can currently, or even back then or currently, that you could have used would create the spatial depth data that normal photographs or paintings have. So that's another aspect of this that's outside of what the Italian
science, right?
So it's kind of like the Tilma of the image of Mary for Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Guadalupe in Mexico.
You know, the fact that in the eye reflection of Mary, it's a
inverse image.
It's the same way the eye would.
Which is incredible. And the microscopic level of going into the eye, not painted on the tilma.
Yes.
There's no way that you can accomplish that.
Yeah.
And so many other elements of the tilma. I mean, the fact that it's survived. I mean, it's a type of cactus fiber that decays within 10 years. And it's been, they're going to be celebrating 500-year anniversary.
And I know you were recently in front of it.
I was. Just a couple weeks ago, I was in Mexico City, was able to pray in front of the image. And it's remarkable. I mean, it's life-size image of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And I was with a group of priests and lay people. We had a great tour guide who was explaining some of these details of the tilma of Our Lady of Guadalupe. So fascinating.
Well, I've never seen it, but I am going to Mexico later this year for a wedding, and I'll be going through Mexico City. So
awesome.
I'm going to make a point to
make some time to be there and walk all the grounds. It is actually the number one pilgrimage site in the entire world. They get more pilgrims there than the Vatican.
Wow.
Or any other site, more than Lourdes, more than Fatima. The number of pilgrims that go to Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico City is really astronomical.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. According to CBS News, 40-year-old Scottish citizen Lee Milne was sentenced to 8 years in prison following his conviction in Glasgow's High Court for culpability for his wife's suicide. This is the first case for Scottish prosecutors to ask jurors to find an abusive spouse criminally responsible for his wife's death without physically causing the death. So closed circuit TV captured the couple just before she jumps off a bridge as she's seen cowering from him as he's yelling at her. The 28-year-old wife was described by witnesses as distraught and trapped in her husband's arms shortly before jumping to her death. Prosecutors showed evidence he had repeatedly previously assaulted her and had locked her in their apartment without food or money. So my question after reading this was, why didn't the Scottish justice system just prosecute him for domestic abuse? Well, it turns out they did. They also got him on that, but they felt the domestic abuse charge alone wouldn't have fully captured what had happened. Mm-hmm. So I'm worried when I read about something like this that we've entered this slippery slope and we'll start to overreach in other ways. So like, let's say, for example, you have a boss who engages in workplace bullying by humiliating an employee or sabotaging their career, and the employee then dies by suicide. This seems to be, to me, to be more of a civil matter and maybe a wrongful death case and not criminal. I mean, for him to be criminally culpable for her suicide, I just think that's a little bit of a stretch.
Well, he didn't throw her off the bridge, did he?
No.
She jumped of her own volition. Yeah, that does become a little bit problematic. So there's a reason why the law exists. And again, legal is separate from moral. Morally, yes, there's probably some culpability in him creating a horrible environment for his wife.
And I think that's a great point because absolutely I agree with that statement.
Yeah, but there does need to be a separation, a healthy separation between morality and legality. I mean, because we can't penetrate into the depth of what is going on in the interior of the
person. And he got 8 years in prison, and I'm sure there is some domestic abuse charge. I'm sure that the limits of the domestic abuse charges in Scotland would have somehow allowed a similar sentence,
mm-hmm.
right? They just wanted to get him also on something else. I just feel like they've entered into a territory they shouldn't be in.
Yeah, it's a little bit potentially problematic. Yeah, so it's worth being a little more circumspect in those situations.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
The National Review published a piece about Jennifer Newsom, wife of California Governor Gavin Newsom, as a case study in Democrats' fundamentally flawed approach to young male voters.
Okay.
Rather than identifying the root causes of young men's estrangement from society, Jennifer Newsom doubles down on the idea that men need to be reformed. And this author thinks that Newsom doesn't really believe that male virtue exists. Apparently, she's even baffled by the fact that her own son is developing right-wing tastes and calls him confused. She went on to say that she and her husband were proposing legislation to force tech companies to restrict content that they deem alt-right. So I assume they're talking about the so-called manosphere when they're talking about alt-right. And I have to admit, I really don't know anything about what people like Andrew Tate are espousing. But I do know that the fact that so many young men are listening to these distasteful types, so I'm told that they're distasteful. I really don't know anything about them. But it's evidence to me that young men are seeking something that society doesn't currently offer them. She goes on to say that she gave her two sons, she has four kids, two sons, two daughters, that she gave her two sons dolls when they were younger. And even though they ripped the heads off, she wanted them to she wanted them to learn that caregiving is not just an activity reserved for women. She also talks about how when she would read a book to her children, and if the protagonist was a male, she would change the he to a she to normalize that women can be the center of the story. So I think this author is spot on that Newsom and other like-minded left-leaning politicians are completely missing the point with young males. And what the heck is wrong with a male protagonist?
Gosh, aren't they all evil, Chris?
Apparently.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs when we can't recognize reality. I mean, in the fact that she would give her son's dolls and they just ripped the heads off. I mean, funny side story. When I was a kid, I have two older sisters, and my sisters had their dolls and things, and we would run them over and have, you know, derby competitions with my sister's dolls.
Yeah, you put them on your Evel Knievel motorcycle and send them over the Snake River Canyon.
Well, and then we had firecrackers and we would set up battles with them. So there's just a different ways that boys behave, and you know, there's a. To their credit, there are a lot of people who were caught up in this type of ideology who couldn't see the facts. And when they started having children and watching the behavior of their own children, despite their own efforts, and realizing, no, there is a difference between boys and girls. There are innate differences.
And what about this idea, though, that there is because of this sort of approach to young males in places like California, that they're searching for something else and they're finding it in, like I said, this manosphere, which I really don't know what it's all about. I just know the term.
Yeah, well, I think someone looking from the outside who's caught up in an ideology that there's no difference between men and women would say that all that is evil. I haven't heard those type of things either, or they might say that it's distasteful. But, you know, I think there's more to it. And she's saying that, you know, men need to be reformed. I would agree. And so do women.
Yes, we all do.
We all need conversion. We all need to turn back to God.
And I think masculinity doesn't need to be reformed.
No, we are created in the image and likeness of God. Male and female, he created us. There is good in every man, every woman. And we need all of us to turn to God so that can be brought out and flourish.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crosswires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens. On AM 1160, The Quest.